All right, hyperkalemia, too much potassium. Too much potassium. Okay, hyperkalemia, bad, yes. But hyperkalemia, what's the number one thing you think of? Hyperkalemia stops hearts. So, hyperkalemia, dysrhythmia. So we want to really protect this person as quickly as possible. The major cause for excess potassium is too much intake. One of the ways that a person can take in too much potassium is salt substitutes. You know, someone who wants to be healthy, so they want to restrict their salt intake, so they take salt substitute. Salt substitute is potassium. Another reason for too much potassium is acid-base imbalances. Too much acid increases potassium. And then another reason is kidney failure. Kidneys don't work right, you don't get rid of excess potassium. So these are the three big reasons, and then there's a fourth one, which is some drugs. Also, it's common in people who've had a massive cell death, so a person who's had a big burn injury or a crushing injury, like a car falls on them, I guess, or they get run over, that can cause a huge amount of potassium release from the inside the cells into the blood. This can lead us to an important false high. If we take a blood sample, what's in blood? Water and cells and some proteins. Now, ordinarily, there's only a little bit of potassium in the water part of the blood, right? What happens if our blood sample, the red blood cells break open? We have hemolysis of our sample. Well, now all of the potassium that was inside those cells is now in the plasma. So if you have someone whose plasma comes back and their potassium is like 17, either the person is dead or it was hemolysis. If you have a patient who has been running, you know, like 3.5, 4.2, 4.2, and you get their next lab value back and it's like 8, chances are it was a hemolytic sample. So what you can do is you're going to ask for a repeat. First, check and make sure they're alive. Maybe get an ECG, but you're going to ask for a repeat because chances are that's hemolytic. All right, manifestations, we already talked about them. ECG changes. We're not really going to deal too much with ECGs right now, but what I want to point out is this is a normal ECG. When we have hypokalemia, look what happens to what we call the ST segment. It drops down. Look what happens to this part. This gets bigger. So you have depressed ST segment in hypokalemia. In hyperkalemia, what you get is this enormous T wave. And it's bigger than this, which is called the QRS. So QRS gets smaller, T gets bigger. I just want you to see that because later on, when you learn more about your ECGs, it'll come back to you then. All right, treatment of potassium. You need to know these. You need to know all of them. You need to know them inside and out. You need to know them backwards and forwards. They are very, very important. So the very first thing, stop any calcium that you're giving them, especially if it's IV calcium. If they're getting calcium, you're going to stop. Very first thing. The next thing is, if it's an emergency, you're going to give them calcium gluconate. Now, calcium gluconate does not do anything to the potassium level. What it does is it protects the heart from the bad parts of potassium.
Are you stopping calcium or the potassium?
Sorry, stop potassium. You're going to stop the potassium. You're going to give calcium. Sorry. So you're going to stop the potassium, and then you're going to give calcium. The calcium does nothing for the potassium levels, but it protects the heart against those high potassium levels. Now, there's a couple ways that, now that we've got the patient under control, they're not going to die yet, we have to deal with the actual potassium. And there's a couple different ways to do that. So we can force potassium from the extracellular fluid into the cells by giving either insulin or bicarbonate. Insulin, when it takes glucose into the cell, also takes potassium along with it. So what you can do is you can give the patient some glucose and some insulin together so you don't bottom out their glucose levels, and that will pull potassium into the cell. The other thing we can do is give sodium bicarbonate. Bicarbonate is what kind of drug? Acid or base? It's a base. So raising the pH of the blood decreases potassium levels by shifting potassium back into the cell. All right, you guys are like woozy. What? All right. Raising the pH, increasing the amount of base in the blood, makes potassium go from the blood into the cells. Okay, so first thing we do is stop the potassium. Second thing, give calcium gluconate if it's an emergency. Then we have a couple different things we could do. Kind of like an intermediate period, we can shift the potassium into the cells. The two ways we can do that are insulin or bicarbonate. So what's the first thing we do? Stop the potassium. What's the second thing we do? Give calcium gluconate. Now that we've got them under control, they're not going to die. If we want to shift potassium into the cell, what are the two ways we can do that? Insulin and bicarbonate. If we give insulin, what should we also give? Glucose, to make sure we don't make them hypoglycemic. Now, the other thing we can do is we can... All right, go ahead. Dangerous potassium levels? Anything above 5 is dangerous. Another question? No? All right. Now, in addition to shifting where potassium is in the body, we can just get rid of the potassium altogether. And there's basically three ways we can do that. We can administer diuretics. Lasix will actually get rid of potassium in the urine. We can give the patient dialysis if they're having kidney problems, and that will eliminate the potassium from the body. And the other thing is you can give a drug called K-exalate. K-exalate is a gel that pulls calcium into the gut. And then you poop it out. Did I say calcium? Yeah. Potassium. K-exalate takes K-plus and pulls it into the gut, and then you poop it out. Whew. So those are the ways that we treat hyperkalemia. You need to know them. You need to... Say again? You ingest it, yeah. All right, hypokalemia. Hypokalemia is anything less than 3.5. Are you all right there? I remember my CPR training. I should encourage you to cough. Cough, Stephanie, cough. Good job. All right. So, if... potassium is less than 3.5, we consider that hypokalemia. Some major causes: abnormal loss via the kidney or the gastrointestinal tract. Magnesium deficiency can cause hypokalemia. And metabolic alkalosis. So if the pH is too high, if there's too much base in a person's blood, that will cause potassium to shift out of the cell, or sorry, in from the blood into the cell. So manifestations. The most serious ones are cardiac, also cause weakness, can cause respiratory weakness, so a person can't breathe as well, and it can also cause decreased gastrointestinal motility, better known as constipation. All right, the way we treat it, we give potassium. The major way of giving potassium is through potassium chloride. We want to give it orally if possible, but you can also give it IV. Giving it IV is very, very dangerous because if you give it too quickly, now what's the person got? Hyperkalemia. And now the patients are really in trouble. Now, you should never exceed 10 to 20 milliequivalents per hour giving it IV. Always needs to be on a pump. You can never just do like a, what we call a gravity drip. Always needs to be on a pump. And the reason for that is if you give it faster than 10 to 20 milliequivalents per hour, you cause hyperkalemia and then the person's heart stops. Now, the rule is no P, no K. Say no P, no K. No P, no K. No P, no K. Say it again. No P, no K, no P, no K. What does that mean, no P, no K? If they are not peeing, they do not get potassium. Because what's in charge of eliminating that potassium that you're about to give the person? The kidneys. So if they don't have normal kidney function, you cannot, you will not, you do not give potassium. I guarantee you that you'll have questions, not necessarily on this test, not necessarily on the final, but you'll have them on your boards where you're going to have a question you're going to need to know, no P, no K. You're going to have patients where you're going to need to know, no P, no K, and that could be the difference between them living and dying.
If they're not urinating,
you do not give them urine. So the doctor orders potassium. If they're not urinating, you do not give them potassium. So if you have a doctor's order and the doctor says, give them potassium, what are you going to do before you give them that potassium? Check their urine output. All right. Yes?
So when, like, say a patient is on some sort of diuretic, you know, that would be another reason.
Yes, some diuretics cause potassium loss. So if they're on one of those, they might need to be on a potassium supplement. But again, if you're giving them diuretics and they're not peeing, that again, you know, just because you put them on a diuretic doesn't necessarily mean they're going to respond. If their kidneys are that far gone, you know, giving them more diuretics might not do anything. All right, calcium. We get it from food. This is going to be a short calcium. We're going to do a longer calcium next semester when we talk about osteoporosis in more detail. But for now, calcium comes from food. More than 99% of it in your body is located in your bones and teeth. It's combined with phosphorus to form bone and teeth. There's an inverse relationship between phosphorus and calcium. Why is that? If you put calcium and phosphate together, what do you get? Calcium phosphate deposits. That would be bad in your blood, right? So what happens is if phosphate levels are high, calcium levels drop. If calcium levels go up, phosphate levels drop. They're always opposite, so you avoid forming bone in your blood. Because that would be bad. Now, okay, so your body uses the bones. It uses your bones kind of like a bank. It puts deposits some calcium in, it pulls some calcium out. Your bones are constantly being rebuilt. About every 2-3 years, every bone in your body is completely rebuilt. So it's not like it's a static thing. So the important thing that your body wants, your body does not care so much about bone. What it cares about is the level of calcium in the blood. So it's going to pull or store calcium in the bone according to how much it needs in the blood. Now, calcium blocks sodium transport and stabilizes the cell membrane. When we say stabilizes the cell membrane, what are we talking about here? Charge, okay. I see some hand motions. Okay. So, what cell membranes are excitable? What kind of cell membranes are excitable? Membranes and membranes. they depolarize. Come on, you can do it. You can do it. Cell membranes that are excitable, that depolarize. Come on. Come on. What was the first subject we talked about in this course? Okay, besides intro. Say again? Neurons? What? Do neurons depolarize? Yes, they do. Yes. So muscle is the other one. You guys lost the $25 million question. So muscle and neurons, neural cells, depolarize. Now, what that means is you've got a cell membrane, and you've got large amounts of sodium on the outside, and you have large amounts of potassium on the inside. So it is currently in a polar state, hyperpolar state. In order for a signal to be sent to either contract or to fire, what happens? We have little pores that allow sodium in. Those are called sodium channels. Now, sodium channels, their tendency to open up, they're kind of like, can I open? Can I open? They're always saying, can I open? Can I open? Please, 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 mommy, can I open? I want to see the sodium go in. You know, they're kind of like little kids like that. They're very excitable. They want to open up. Now, calcium is kind of like the principal. Sit down, young man. Calm down. Wait your turn. So calcium will make those sodium channels less excitable. So that decreases the excitability or the ability of that cell to depolarize. Now, some of the calcium in your blood is bound to albumin. So does it work? Is it active? No, because it's dating. It's not available. So some is bound to phosphate in bone and teeth. Is that available? No. And some of it is actually in calcified deposits in your body. We can actually measure those with MRAs nowadays. Is that available? No. So the only thing that's really available is we call the ionic form in the blood. So what we're having you memorize, we call the total calcium level. But there's also an ionized or free calcium level, and that's the one that's actually truly biologically active. Now, calcium is important in the transmission of nerve impulse and myocardial contraction. We just talked about that for a second. Also important for blood clotting, for the formation of teeth and muscle and what the heck, muscle contractions again, myocardial versus skeletal muscle. Also arterial muscles, and bronchial muscle, detrusor muscle, GI muscle. Every muscle in your body depends on calcium. The balance is controlled by some hormones. Parathyroid hormone tells your body we want more calcium in the blood. Calcitonin says we want less in the blood. If we have less in the blood, where do we put it? Two places. Bone and pee. Yes, pee. Urine. Also influenced by the amount of vitamin D and calcium intake. Bone is used as a bank. Now, hypercalcemia. Hypercalcemia, the major cause, number one cause, is hyperparathyroidism. The major cause of hyperparathyroidism is a hyperparathyroid tumor that secretes parathyroid hormone. There's a lot of hyper and paras in that sentence, isn't there? Vitamin D overdose can cause it, but that's much less common. And prolonged immobilization, so someone who just doesn't move around. And the reason for that is, how do we build bone? What helps build bone? Exercise, and particularly weight-bearing exercise. That was an example of. So, weight-bearing exercise. Now, we've got a person who's immobile, lying in bed all day. The opposite happens. Their bones actually begin to break down a bit, and that release of calcium increases blood levels. Vitamin D, you pretty much have to take a pill. Yeah. Very uncommon, though.
Do the pills have to react?
No. 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 What happens is your body synthesizes vitamin D from other things when you go out in the sun. Yeah, but vitamin D deficiency is much more common than vitamin D overdose in this country. All right, manifestations. We talked about them. Decreased memory, confusion, disorientation, fatigue, constipation. Yes, that's fun. So the way we treat it, we treat it with diuretics, Lasix. We can give a person more water and dilute the calcium. We can give a person synthetic calcitonin, or we can get them up and walking. Hypocalcemia, caused by decreased production of parathyroidism, so hypoparathyroidism. Acute pancreatitis can cause this. Blood transfusions. Now, blood clots when it's still, right? Not. Now, when we take it out of the body, it's pretty darn still, right? So to prevent clotting of blood before we give it to a person, we put something in it called citrate. Now, how many of you have heard of a product called calcium citrate? Citracal. Okay, so calcium and citrate form a salt called calcium citrate. So when you give blood products to a person, that citrate will actually bind with calcium in your blood. So if you give too many blood products, you can actually cause hypocalcemia because you've created too much calcium citrate in the person's blood. Alkalosis can cause it, and then just decreased intake. And oh, look, Trousseau's sign. Oh, Chvostek sign, yay! Also get some other stuff as well. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to treat the cause, and we're going to give calcium replacement. You can give it oral or IV. The major IV form is calcium what? Gluconate. Calcium gluconate is the number one form of IV calcium. Oral calcium, you can give calcium carbonate, calcium citrate. There's a couple others, but calcium carbonate is by far the number one. Calcium citrate's a little bit better absorbed, but the best way to get calcium is through your diet, and milk is a very good source. Treat pain and anxiety to prevent hyperventilation-induced respiratory alkalosis. Now, who here has ever had a muscle cramp? Did it hurt? Yes. So, when people hurt, what do they tend to get? What do we say happens when a person hurts? But what happens? What's the brain response? Okay, but. Okay, that is going to happen. You're going to fire more often. But what happens to the brain? The brain sends a signal down to some glands and says, release a hormone, epinephrine. So you're going to get sympathetic response. Sympathetic response, what does that do to a person's breathing rate? Makes it go up. Now, imagine for a moment that you've got tetany, which is muscle spasm all over your body. Do you think that's going to be painful? So do you think a person's going to be breathing a little bit faster? Yes, you can be sure about it. So what can happen is when you breathe too much, you blow off what gas? CO2. What does that do to your pH? Makes it more basic. So alkalotic blood causes decreased calcium levels, makes it worse. So you want to make sure you treat the pain in a patient who's hypocalcemic. Phosphate, we're not going to really talk very much about. You can read it on your own. Magnesium, we're pretty much said all we're going to say. Acid base, that's what we're going to do tomorrow.